everybody, and welcome to Speak On It, our new and rebranded podcast. So we used to be Surge Spotlight, and entering into the new year, happy new year by the way, 2022, we are now Speak On It. So our values will relatively stay the same. We are still going to be creating content surrounding the tech industry, exploring tech culture, and having great conversations with people in the industry far and wide. So before we get into that, I really urge you guys to follow our social media, SFU Surge, to keep up with our podcast, as well as give us a follow while you're listening right now, so you can follow us on our Speak On It journey. So hey, before we get into the episode, I really wanted to dial it back a bit. I know that it's been a long couple of months in 2021, and I really hope that you guys are enjoying the new year so far and taking care of yourselves, because honestly, check in with yourselves, check in with your friends, and make sure that everyone's having a good time, because I know I'm having a good time. Woo! Anyways, I really genuinely hope you're doing well. As you know, our listeners range from students, university alumni, or just your everyday person interested in or involved in the tech field. And so on the topic of people, our team has actually leveled up and we expanded our crew. So a warm welcome to our new podcast manager, Bridget. She's absolutely amazing and is the MVP in bringing Speak On It to life. I'm really grateful for you. So thank you so much and welcome aboard. So with more minds on deck, we're really able to ideate more and create more with the capacity that we have. So more unique and meaningful content coming your way. That being said, today's episode, we have our amazing guest, Jim. How are you doing today, Jim?
I'm doing great. It's cooler than it has been a couple of times over the summer. And absolutely, it's Friday. Yeah. So, I mean, who could ask for anything more?
Yes, can't complain. It is Friday. So just a bit about Jim. He is a principal at Claris Consulting Group and EM Sciences. He works with teams across the country, and his work mainly focuses on resilience, product management, diversity, inclusion, and all that amazing stuff. So to get started, can you give us a quick overview of your work history?
Okay, we'll start with that, Linda. We'll go back actually to university. I started in engineering, but transferred over to physics. I've got a degree in physics, which I've never used in the real world.
That was very interesting to me.
Which is probably going to be true for a lot of people once they become alumni and realize what's going on out there, and they move to a place where they'd like to work.
Thanks for reinforcing that.
But with the start in engineering, I did some work mostly in technology. I spent 10 years in Ottawa working on small projects, five or six mm-hmm. people, 5 or 6 months, and you could mm-hmm. get away with ad hoc interaction. Mm-hmm. I moved to Vancouver in 1990. And I spent 6 years working on an air traffic control system, which is kind of crazy. So if you're in an airplane, it's, yeah, super, you know, super. I've written some of the software that keeps your plane up in the air. A very different experience, because that was a 17-year project. That was 250 people. And that's where...
I'm sorry, 17 years?
17 years from when the contract was awarded to when something shipped.
Wow.
Yes, so 17 years.
On one project.
Yes. Well, I spent 6 years on it.
I'm done on. Now. Oh, okay. Is it? It's like holistically, it took 17 years. You were working on it for a huge chunk of that.
Yeah. And these systems, when they come out, they're meant to support, like this system is meant to support air travel in Canada for the next 40 or 50 years or so. Mm-hmm. So they're big, long-lived systems. And, you know, if it's about keeping planes in the air, there's this thing about human safety that's a critical element as well.
Right.
So they've got to do it right. I'm glad they didn't just focus on time and on budget to ship the darn thing.
And that actually goes to say, this is kind of on a tangent, but your physics degree went to good use. Working on planes. Gravity, things like that. That's like kind of my only knowledge of physics, gravity, things falling. I don't know. Anyways, all I remember is an apple fell from a tree and someone like measured the speed of it. Who is that person?
Newton.
The same, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
My physics education is literally from grade 8. Anyways, that's super cool. I noticed that, according to your resume, you've dabbled in some teaching opportunities, lecturing at institutions like BCIT, UBC, and including SFU. So you've been collaborating with people in such diverse like fields of study, different age groups, there was a broad array of students.
Huge variety.
Yeah, so that being said, who does product management benefit and who should be trained in it? And I guess to backtrack for anyone in the audience, what is product management?
Well, I think the focus is really project management rather than product management is what I do. In project management, you're working with others to try to build something that didn't exist before to deliver some value to other people. And that's what businesses do to make money, to stay afloat. And you know, thinking about building something new as a project gives us a lot of structure that helps us do so effectively and efficiency, that sort of thing. It's interesting because, you know, I don't know if I really dabbled with universities and colleges like BCIT and this. I still teach with SFU periodically. In the continuing studies program, I've worked with the BD School of Business a few times. And I've done virtually the same material in organizations all over the world as well. So, mm-hmm. And it's all generally centered around project management with the human focus in mind. Mm-hmm. So
you don't always train necessarily students or people from institutions, but it could be like any group or any work
in industry. I worked with a games company out of Victoria and ran 35 or 75 people through workshops a few months ago. I worked with a manufacturing firm in Burnaby. I've worked with a bunch of librarians in Coquitlam. I've worked with Samsung in Korea. I've worked with HP all over the world, all kinds of different organizations. And I think the common denominator there is that projects are people working together to solve a problem. And I think that's important because most offerings of project management training that you see in the world focus on the hard skills. They focus on, you know, stages and phases, and they'll give you project templates and they'll talk about tools like, well, it used to be Microsoft Project, but today it might be monday.com or it might be, whatever tool, Asana, the same Slack and all of that thinking is good, but it needs to be complemented with a focus on the fact that we are humans working together. We're not cogs in a machine. Yeah. Very few organizations
like that's so easier far. It's like so simple to think about but it's just like saying it is like, wow, like you're right. Like when you think about, or like I guess me from the outside, when I think of like project management or any, like even the word management makes me think of like very structural activities happening. Yeah. You
totally.
Know,
so you're already, Linda, you're already being pulled into that traditional project management way of thinking.
Yeah.
But it's and that started in the Industrial Revolution 120 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's where we came up with org charts. That's where we came up with hierarchies, and that's where we came up with a lot of the tools that are in use today. And somebody said something, Frederick Winslow Taylor said something around 1920. And he said, in the past, projects were about people. He said, in the future, projects are about systems. And people misinterpreted that to think of systems as being structures and processes. Mm-hmm. And they forgot about the fact that we are still humans. But in most projects, people are treated, they're not treated with the kind of humanistic ideas that I'm sure we'll talk about here, but they're treated in terms of, are they compliant? Are they doing what they're asked to do? Are they fitting into the machine like gears in,
like how, like, are you doing your task the way it should be so that this can be fulfilled properly.
Right.
So well, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, just do it right, because that's how it should be done every time.
Yeah. So they're looking for predictability. They're looking for repeatability. They're looking for consistency.
Yeah, consistency.
And that's all great if you're running a factory and you want to, you know, pound out 100,000 phones a day or something like that. But that really puts constraints on what humans can contribute to the process.
Mm-hmm. And it limits a lot of creativity too.
Oh, exactly. Creativity, innovation, those amazing aha moments that you can get are really stifled in that kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more and more as we're transitioning to a space where there's more knowledge work being done, this is what's happening in tech a lot these days, but in almost any field, being able to differentiate by being creative, by being innovative, by coming out with new things is not something that's served by the traditional way of running projects. What happens in project management when you're taught the old school way of project management, if you will, traditional, to be polite about it, you're creating a culture of project management. And there's some interesting ideas about culture and language that exist outside the workplace. Just when you think about cultures in general, cultures and language go hand in hand. The culture, the way people behave, kind of informs the language. And the language, in turn, kind of fits with that culture. So if you're in a culture, in traditional project management, that doesn't really respect the value of things like psychological safety, trust, integrity, respect,
mm-hmm.
That culture doesn't have those terms in its language.
Mm-hmm.
And if a culture doesn't have terms for certain things, people embedded in that culture literally cannot see those things. So when they're trying to figure out how they get better on projects, they go, oh, we need to add more tools, add more technology, be more rigorous with our process,
mm-hmm.
which actually is pushing in the wrong direction.
So you feel like the relationship between language and culture should be like quite seamless, and you feel like there's some sort of divide.
Yeah, I think the relationship between language and culture is seamless. And what I think is that the traditional language around project management is limited. And yeah, what I'm saying
is it's changing.
We need to add to the lexicon. Yeah. We need to add things like psychological safety and trust and respect and integrity. So there's something that we do in our workshops that really reinforces this for me every time I run a workshop. I did so again this week. I'll ask people in the workshop to think about their best and their worst project experiences and to identify the characteristics that made that a great experience or made that a horrible experience. And then they get in groups and they compare notes and they come up with a distillation of what's the biggest things. And it is always about the human element. I mean, the great projects are the ones where they had respect and integrity and they had autonomy where they could do things. And the worst ones are the ones where they didn't have those things.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's ever said that our project rocked because we had Asana or because we did Agile or any of those things. And very often when a project manager is brought up, somebody who has that role in a project, that's brought up on the negative side of things, like they were micromanaging or that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's everybody's experience has been the same for decades, regardless of what domain I ask these questions in. The difference for people between their best and worst project experiences has to do with human interaction.
Mm-hmm. I can relate to that. And I'm sure anybody listening can relate to that if a project came to mind. For example, like, not to get into personal experiences, but like, I feel like in a workplace or in a group, in a project, everyone is capable, and that's why you're working on it. Everyone's capable of doing what they're doing. They're probably skilled. They got hired for a reason, la da 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 da. And so when they're asked that question, it's like, their focus isn't so much on how well they work on what their skill, like their hard skill, but it's more like how they collaborated, with such and such and so and so, how they felt like psychologically as a co-op student. And I feel like we've done similar activities and like noticed the same things, but mm-hmm. I never kind of pieced it together in this context of like project management.
Yeah. And so it's a universal thing that people find. And, you know, unfortunately, most people are assessed for their jobs based on, you know, the skills that are on their resume, and what skills people want to augment in the organization. Mm-hmm. But when they're hired, they find that they're immersed in a group, they're working with others. And sometimes that works well, sometimes it doesn't. There was a study that Google did probably about 10 years ago now. They called it their Aristotle Project, because Google thought that to have the best teams, you just hired the best people. That was their hiring thinking.
And that's what even people on the other side of hiring think. Like, you know, like I need to be the best at this skill, this system, this hard skill, whatever. And they don't really think about, oh, now I'm integrated into this team and I have to excel with others. You know, like I can't just,
team
you know
gonna
what
work
I mean?
Well together. Yeah. So I'm not saying don't sweat the skills. Skills are still important. But what they found was that if they just put the best people together, they got kind of mediocre results. So they went, oh, that's weird. And they took all the money they make from us by serving us ads. And they did an experiment. And what they found in this Aristotle project that they ran is that the teams that had the best performance were the teams that gelled, the teams that found a way to work well together. Mm-hmm. And it had no correlation with whether that was filled with rock stars or, you know, mediocre skill kind of people. It was great because Google spent a ton of money to come up with data points that reinforce what we've been arguing for decades.
Yeah. And I'm sure that kind of project has elevated the way that Google works as a company, like from now on, future hiring processes, other companies can learn from it. I love that. It makes me feel better as someone going into the workforce. It makes me feel better about like, the future teams that I may be working in and like maybe like some of the priorities that managers have over other priorities.
Well, and so just because Google did this experiment doesn't mean that everybody thinks that way now.
Right.
It
is like a huge company.
They're massive and they're influential, but that doesn't mean that everybody has just said, well, we got to be like Google.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a shift that's going to take a lot of time to make it into being the dominant way of thinking.
That's
true. And that's very important.
I mean, the Industrial Revolution, that was a couple of years back.
It's evolution. We're not flipping a light switch here.
And to think about it, that idea from the Industrial Revolution, when was that? Like in the
20s? 1900, 1920, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
120 years ago.
That it's had years and decades to solidify that understanding of, you know, so like to be able to not reverse it, but like to kind of like reinvent the idea of it.
To get to version 2.0.
Yeah, it's going to take some time and it's going to take a lot of conversations and a lot of understanding.
Tons. And if you think about it, the Industrial Revolution kicked off because that was around the time where we had much easier availability of energy, petroleum, oil, gas, that sort of thing. And that allowed them to do major projects like building a national railroad and that sort of thing. And that was the thing. It was the massive availability of energy that allowed the Industrial Revolution to kick off. Mm-hmm. These days, this revolution that I'm talking about here, the shift that's happening, is I think a result of the massive availability of information. And so that is the kickoff of this new shift. And it literally will take generations to do so. So if you've got an early awareness of the fact that organizations, if they value people and they understand the ideas behind building effective teams, then that becomes something that you need to take into your interviews and start poking at the companies you're thinking about working.
Right. Absolutely.
How do they behave? How do they bring people on? What do they focus on to make sure that the teams are working well together? Mm-hmm. All of those ideas are things that, at least until it becomes mainstream, we should be critical when we're looking at working with organizations to see how they measure up against what we're looking for.
That's really cool for me to understand, like from your perspective. Like, I don't know, these aren't really things that I think about on the day to day or like have ever really thought about, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You kind of just hear big company names and are like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, I could learn this skill to get that job. Then mm-hmm. you don't really think about anything past that. You just kind of focus on getting a job.
Well, and I think there's a lot of value in everybody paying more attention to their own well-being.
Absolutely.
Both in or out of the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that I've seen that really kind of disturbs me is when people will go into the workplace feeling that they have to behave in a way that is not who they genuinely are. Mm-hmm. Like they have to wear a mask in the workplace. And there's a lot of people that do that. They behave in a different way.
Yeah. For a second, I was thinking the whole like masks for COVID. I was like, they have to go.
No, not those masks.
I know. That was my default mindset. I was like, yes, they do. Yeah, you're right. I mean, never mind. Yeah.
But putting on a veneer and behaving in a different way. And anytime you have to leave part of you at the door, or anytime something that you value in yourself isn't appreciated or is even diminished where you're working, how can you possibly give your all to the work that you're being asked to do? You can't. Mm-hmm. So you want to find a place that, yes, definitely supports the technical things that you're trying to achieve in your career, but also appreciates you for being you.
Mm-hmm.
And
that represents that you value. Yeah, as well.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like people need to start like, you know, putting themselves first, on top. And I feel like sometimes even me, I feel like that's selfish to do sometimes. It's kind of a thing that's personally me, like putting myself first is like so hard, especially when you're a university student. You kind of like forget about your mental health sometimes.
It's not selfish either, Linda, at all. It is, you know, I think self-aware is mm-hmm. is probably one of the primary things that we're looking for here, because if you are really in tune with what you feel is important for you, where you want to go with your career, and how you want to be treated as a human, mm-hmm. then you have an ability to test places where you might work to see how does that fit with what my needs are.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is self-exploration to really get to the point of understanding mm-hmm.
what is your capacity and like where are you able to thrive based on that capacity, and like like where's your line, like at the end of the day, because you should respect that boundary.
Yeah, and thriving is a great term to use there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, so love this conversation. I'm going to switch gears a little bit more and ask you about consulting. So just for the audience, once again, what is consulting and what differentiates your firm from other consulting services? I mean, you've kind of answered part of that question throughout the conversation, but if you wanted to give a bit more background for anybody,
well, who might consulting, not know. Like in general, consulting is being external to the company and coming in to help them solve a particular problem or learn a particular set of skills or to be objective for a certain problem that they're mm-hmm. trying to deal with. But it's really the key thing about consulting is that you're an external entity coming in to support them over a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, like having a fresh set of eyes on anything is so like good. Like it's so like you never know. Like I worked with a company and they had like a third party marketing I mean it wasn't really consulting. It was consulting, I guess. But like another mm-hmm. company dealt with one area of the company who wasn't. Right. And so eventually they hired internally, but mm-hmm. at the beginning. And so I thought it was pretty interesting because they brought up perspectives that they would have never thought about. Like it kind of complemented, I feel like consulting works to complement what the ideas that they already have and mm-hmm. seeing like where it fits from, I guess, more experience or someone who's more experienced.
More experience, broader experience perhaps. And certainly as companies are starting up, mm-hmm. It's quite often going to be a good bridge to bring in somebody external to maybe manage social media for a while right. until they get on their feet and mm-hmm. and are able to hire somebody to do it internally as well. So there's all kinds of reasons for interacting with consultants. And I think if there's a differentiator, before I started my own business, I was in another consulting firm. And I did what a lot of consulting firms do today, especially when you're thinking about how to run projects. A lot of firms have a standardized approach in their mind. And they'll go into an organization and they'll say, well, for you to rock on your projects, you should really follow this approach. These days, it's generally going to be something around agile is what people talk about as a way of doing that. And one of the reasons that I left that company and started my own business is I found that wasn't an effective way to deliver sustained value to the organization. Mm-hmm. Because in my experience over the last 20 years or so, most companies that implement Agile do it in a very dogmatic way, which is kind of an oxymoron.
But what do you mean by Agile? Like the actual like adjective, like of being Agile?
Yeah. There's a group of people that got together in Utah 15 or 20 years ago, technologists, software guys. And they're all guys, middle-aged guys.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. And we could go with that. We could take that.
That's another conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. There were no women, you know, it was.
Guys, listen to episode 2, which her name's Panise. We talk about women empowerment in the tech world. Also listen to our next episode after this one. Anyways.
Yeah, totally need that stuff for sure. And so they came up with these ideas around developing software in a more flexible manner. And they called it Agile, and the movement took off. Right. And almost everybody is like, oh my God, we have to build software in a agile manner.
I didn't know that, but thanks for that, guys.
Well, but the problem is a lot of great ideas, and I know some of these guys and I respect them, but the problem is in the implementation. And because it was implemented largely in organizations that were raised in this traditional thinking about project management, mm-hmm. when they look at Agile, all they see is a more loosely defined process. They don't really understand the value behind the human element and all that sort of thing. So really, it's just another form of process that falls back on Industrial Revolution ideas.
What's the difference between an agile project and a non-agile project?
Oh, you could get 100 different answers if you asked 100 different people.
Sorry, it pays to be a curious person.
No, totally.
And that's why I'm a podcast host, because I just ask the most hardest questions, apparently.
So my thinking is that an agile project is one where they look at the current understanding of where they are, what they're trying to achieve and what they've achieved recently and that sort of thing. And they make adjustments to how they move forward based on what they've just learned.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Thank you for that. That was a whole lesson. I hope you guys are taking notes because I'm learning things. Okay. So we did go into a little bit about your business, and you kind of already answered my next question on why you decided to start a business. Yeah. More about your business. Are you planning to be, provide your services more online, like virtually going forward? Because I'm sure that you've worked virtually in the past few months, years, actually.
16 months. Absolutely. It's interesting how prior to COVID, we always ran our workshops face to face. Okay. And we always assumed that we could never do this in a virtual environment. And COVID hit and we were faced with a decision. We either figure out a way to do it or we sit on our hands till this thing is over, and it's not over.
No.
So we figured out a way to do it. And in doing so, we learned that we were kind of giving ourselves a justification to not grow. So we learned from that, and we're delivering online, and that allows.
How's that going?
It's great because, I can sit at home like this and I can interact with people from Australia or Vietnam or wherever in the world I want to be.
So what you thought limited you potentially?
Well, because a lot of our workshops are interactive.
In person, right.
They're interactive. So we would do a project.
So would you travel somewhere? You would travel somewhere.
I've been all over the world to run these workshops, and I'm getting a little tired of that travel.
I wish I could say the same.
Yeah.
I haven't yet to touch that travel yet, but
yeah. So there's a lot of, there's the time associated with that you really can't do much else, but it's allowed us to engage with organizations that otherwise we couldn't. And we're still learning along the way. Like, we've grown to be able to run interactive sessions over Zoom using tools like Miro or something like that to support interaction. But we're also taking some of our products and we're moving them into asynchronous online training tools like Thinkific or Kajabi or Udemy, that sort of thing.
I love that. And I feel like there's so many amazing stories in terms of innovation for businesses who have yet to, explore virtual work. So just hearing that is just so amazing. We all had to go through it in school, I guess. And I feel like asynchronous is just the next best thing. Like, yes, love asynchronous. Some people might argue that they prefer synchronous because it's closer to the more real time, face to face, quote unquote. But I don't know. Asynchronous is just, it allows you to, in terms of studying, you can go back, you could rewind. And exactly. If you miss something, that's just for me, love that. And a lot of people can learn at their own pace, which is also important and something that standardized teaching or testing doesn't really accommodate to.
Yeah.
So many things. Thank you for that. In consulting, which industries or companies use your service the most? Or you don't have to say the names, but you can say what kinds.
Yeah, it's been mostly technology companies, primarily because I've got a tech background. And there's a credibility that comes with that. The fact that I can say, I spent 6 years working on an air traffic control system means that somebody who's a company that writes software is going to go, hey, he's actually done this stuff before. We can trust what he says. So that was really where I had the strongest base when I started
the business. Expertise, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's expanded since then. And again,
definitely.
If the focus is on people working together to solve a shared problem, that's sector independent.
Okay, let's talk about hard skills and soft skills. Which one do employers value more in your experience?
Almost universally.
Give us your wisdom.
Almost universally, they currently value the hard skills. That's the sort of things that they'll ask about, that they're looking for on your resume, that sort of thing. Because there's a perception that soft skills are tough to assess.
There's a perception that everyone can be organized,
Or everybody can get along.
Communications, everyone can do that. Communication major right now, just sitting here
I think part of that again is that most organizations, most people in a position for hiring have been indoctrinated into that traditional project management thinking. That it's about hard skills, and I'll hand you the process and you'll follow this process and we'll deliver widgets at the right pace.
And it ties into the whole agile thing. Can this person do this fast? I know at some interviews for engineering companies, my friend told me, she had an interview once and she was like, yeah, they made me do like math equations, like on board. And like, I'm like, oh, they really want to see how you work. Like, are you fast? Are you effective? Like, obviously that's super important, but like, those are the things they prioritize even at the beginning of working there. Like you don't even have the job yet. And they're wondering how we work.
So like, there's all these technical tests that a lot of tech companies do this as well. They'll ask you to solve a problem or at least explain how you would solve it or something like that. And I don't know if that is really valuable because it's kind of an artificial environment. You're under the gun just because you're in an interview. And you get those things and it's not the way you would solve a problem in the workplace.
I mean, if
you're in a reasonable workplace, if you've got a problem, you swing your chair around, talk to the person beside you and go, what do you think about this? And you get your heads together if you were good at the soft skills.
True.
You know?
True.
Yeah. So they're testing for people who can work independently of one another, which is kind of reinforcing that old idea of not cherishing the value of collaboration.
You said before that most of what you learn in undergrad is hard skills. So how can students improve their soft skills before they enter the workforce?
I think there's a lot of things that you can do. There is there's a lot of authors. There are people that are prominent on the web, whether it's blogging, that sort of thing. When you think about Brené Brown or Simon Sinek, Adam Grant or Dan Pink, Amy Edmondson, who comes from the Harvard Business School, they're all talking about these ideas about effectiveness and soft skills and appreciating humans for as being different than machines. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that you can do on your own in terms of reflection and journaling to learn more about yourself. Having discussions, deep discussions.
I love that. Learning more about yourself.
Being able to build your own personal resilience. Mm-hmm. And that's building up a set of tools that will allow you to manage whatever life throws at you, if you will. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that unfortunately they seem to be extracurricular in a lot of university programs. But you know, I think if you've got some electives and you can go into the humanities and take some of the electives in the humanities, you might find a different perspective that can be very valuable to complement what you're trained in your other courses.
Thank you. So I guess to wrap up, one more major question. What are some distinct changes within your industry that you've noticed, like from the beginning of your career until recently?
From the beginning of 20 years ago is when I started my business. We'll start there sort of thing, or even before that. 20 years ago, the ideas that I talked about, that we've talked about in our training about soft skills and focusing intentionally on the human element and teams working together well, that was very, very rare for anybody to talk about. And that's becoming more and more prominent. Mm-hmm. There's an organization called the Project Management Institute that is, at least they claim that they're the center of excellence, if you will, for project management. And they put out a body of knowledge every couple of years. And they just released their latest version 7 of their body of knowledge. And they have come around to talking about these soft skills. I just did a quick search on their latest version of their body of knowledge, and they actually have terms like integrity and psychological safety and trust that they talk about. And I'm like, well, it's about time that you guys finally catch up to what we're doing, sort of thing. So I'm seeing this shift happening. And just like the Industrial Revolution was a generation or two in play, this is where we are right now. And so we're kind of riding a wave. And I think that wave is going to be driven primarily by today's youth. It's going to be driven by today's youth for a couple of reasons. There's a ton of energy there, which is great. There is a raised awareness of taking care of yourself in organizations or in life in general, mm-hmm. sort of thing. And the youth did not drink the Kool-Aid of traditional project management yet. So they're open to these ideas. So I've spent a lot of time in the last 10 years working with grad students in these courses, mm-hmm. and they just eat it up. They love it. And I've worked with undergrads. I've talked with a number of different groups. And when we're looking at university age or getting up to about 30 or so, the ideas that we talk about really resonate. And so that is part of the wave that is going to make for that major shift, so that maybe 10, maybe 15 years from now, I hope I see it, is that a focus on building an effective culture for teams is going to be the norm rather than the outlier.
Yeah.
When you're looking Absolutely. At organizations.
Yeah. And I feel like even just hearing about like the work you do and like how far you've come in like this space, I feel like it's almost kind of comforting and like relieving to like know that like this is something that's being pushed somewhere and like by so many people, and hopefully becoming, like you said, more mainstream. Not just me, I'm sure like so many people and people like maybe in university grad students are just like kind of looking forward to and leaning towards like as they enter the workforce and in this journey in their life.
Mm-hmm. And life is a journey, and mm-hmm. I'm still learning a ton.
Absolutely,
I have to do that all the way through life. And there's been some major shifts. I didn't graduate and then get a job and then stay there till I retired. There's been if you embrace learning, ideally learning in different forms, not always in a lecture hall with exams or that sort of thing. It can be a really enjoyable ride all the way through, and you'll get more out of it as you go.
Thank you. Yeah. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. And also on that note, thank you so much for chatting with us today. I talk about us as if there's a whole group of us here, but like mm-hmm. I see like the podcast is like a group thing, because it technically is, even though I'm just the voice, but there's people behind this. But thank you for so much for being with us and sharing your wisdom and your knowledge and your expertise regarding your career and your approach towards cultivating healthy teams and a positive community, as well as building your resilience and your personal resilience. I think that's something that we can all focus on moving forward. And especially this episode's probably coming out in September. We're all like scrambling at the beginning of school and things.
Yeah.
Guys, be resilient, focus on yourself, prioritize your mental health. There's a lot of crazy things in the world and you will get that job. Just make sure you have fun and you enjoy that experience.
That's right. If something doesn't work, learn from it and move on. And always focus on understanding your destination is a big part of self-awareness as well. Mm-hmm. What the heck do you want out of life is something that a lot of people never really put a lot of thought into.
Absolutely. Thank you so much once again for your time. Thanks everyone for listening to that episode. And for anyone tuning in right now, we'll be back again with another episode very soon. So stay tuned. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at SFU Surge, as well as follow me on Instagram, Blazing Spider-Man, if you want to be a part of the wider tech conversation and possibly contribute to future episodes. So we hope to see you later.